We're very happy to be here with a group of people who are actually interested in seniors. And whatever your degree is in your interest, you will hopefully be empowered to continue on and continue with your group. Age-friendly New York City. As cities across the globe experienced rapid urbanization and population aging, they asked the question, how do we make our communities more age-friendly? The focus of the WHO project was learning from older adults what they knew as the strengths and the challenges of growing old in cities. The domains of city life, which we saw from the other presentation, public spaces, transportation, information and communication, housing, respect and social inclusion, social participation, civic participation and employment, health and social services, all have been a very primary role in the WHO's approach to the aging problem. The central idea, however, that New York looked at was to move beyond planning specialized services for older adults, but rather to add a senior lens of urban planning and implementation. And one way the WHO project does this is by encouraging cities to assess their age friendliness across the several domains, as you can see there. We in New York thought we had something unique to bring to this effort. We thought New York is an extraordinary city in that it's really not just one city, it's basically five cities put together. It's huge, it's immense. We have over 8 million people. We are one of the most diverse cities in the country. Just in our city alone, we have over 170 languages spoken. So it was quite a task for us to take this project. Our project was launched at the end of 2007. Public-private partnerships was our main concern. We wanted the government to also take part in our age-friendly. We knew we could not do it alone, but we needed the mayor's office and the city council to help us. And in so doing, we established a steering committee of government and NGO partners to design and implement a citywide assessment of New York. Let's see. The growth of New York's older population is astounding. In 2005, we had a little over 900,000. 2020, we're going to be just under probably just 1 million. And by 2030, the city of New York is going to have almost 1,400,000 seniors. Now, if you could look at the other side of the chart here, the seniors are going up and the young children are going down. So there is a high percentage of concentration, I think, in the government, the city government, to address these problems. The diversity of New York's older population is very, very intense. Over 40% of adults were born in another country or have one of their parents from another country. And as we know that 25% of the current elders speak English less than very efficiently or well. New York's diversity is one of its greatest strengths, It also, however, is one of its greatest challenges, particularly for research and programming. It is critical that we create a supportive environment in order to allow all older New Yorkers to stay active and continue contributing to the city. And so we began our assessment process. Now, I have to make a personal confession here. I'm fairly new to aging problems, never thinking that I would be aging, of course, until my mother, who moved in with me when she was 93, a vibrant, wonderful person, a poet, a painter, who at age 80 decided that she wanted to run a marathon, and came in first place at 80 over age 60 for this 65 and older group, and sort of put her daughters to shame. But she was a pillar in my life. She was a lantern. And when she got sick, I saw that decrease of her vibrancy and her love and her joy, and she loved New York. And that really, truly, truly affected me. And this is how I sort of got into this business. I went to one of the community forums that the New York Academy of Medicine sponsored, and that is what drew me into here. So what we did was, getting back to our plan here, we at the Academy of Medicine assessed our city. We conducted 7 expert roundtables, 14 community forums. We had constituent feedback forums from over 340, and there were more. That was just the initial group that we had. We had focus groups, 13 groups with more than 75 individuals, and interviews, 24 individuals. Special effort was made to reach those seniors who were homebound and immigrant seniors, which are part of an often forgotten community. We engaged in a year-long multi-method assessment to find out how age-friendly New York City really was and what could be done to improve it. That included a variety of activities. We used such a range of methods because New York City is a complex environment, and we wanted to hear from everyone as much as we could. Topics for the expert roundtables: business, health, housing, development, tenant rights, transportation and outdoor space, civic engagement, and social services. Our 14 community forums, like the expert roundtables, were co-hosted by NIAM and the City Council of New York. The forums reached more than 1,500 people. Focus groups and interviews, immigrants, isolated older adults, those in poverty. Examples: the formerly homeless, HIV-infected seniors, elders with incomes of less than $10,000, immigrant groups, Russians, Chinese, Jamaican, Puerto Rican, and Dominican, plus individuals interviewed with 24 mostly Latin American older adults. With all of this, we started to plan our approach to creating an age-friendly New York. We had a wealth of information. The community reports and the forums were just, the seniors were so happy to give us this information, and we were so happy to receive it because we had an idea of what we wanted to do. And our result was the findings report, which is, if there are any copies left over, we have in the back. We started our plan with the results from our findings report and had a press conference to introduce age-friendly New York to New York. Unfortunately, the mayor was going to be there. It was going to be a big deal. Unfortunately, it happened to be September 15th, 2008, and I don't know if anybody knows that date. That's when Lehman Brothers defaulted. So all of a sudden, our age-friendly had to take a back seat to the economic condition of New York. But we persevered. We went forward. We were challenged, actually, to realize the actual initiatives that we proposed, because now it was at an even harder level. It reemphasized the need for every sector to be involved in the effort to make New York City an age-friendly city. Assets. Our findings are concentrated around two key issues. One is New York has many assets and features that make it a great place to grow old. Our report helps illuminate many of the ways that older New Yorkers already are and can be more included and connected as full participants in all aspects of the city. This is something we found out, that seniors really want to contribute. They don't always want to take, but they want to be a part of the city. They want to give. And it's not just about helping people age in place. It's about ensuring that those places are interesting, that they're supportive, that they're rich, inclusive, and accessible to all New Yorkers, regardless of age, sex, race, immigrant status, or ability. Older New Yorkers like the city for many of its reasons, other people do, and also recognize the advantages it offers to them, specifically transportation, proximity and convenience to services, shops and activities, high quality health care. New York is a great place to live. It's the only place to live. I have to agree with that. Older gentlemen who participated in the focus group said that. I kissed the ground when I moved back to Brooklyn, said another participant. We asked them and they were very happy to give us why they love New York. And it was encouraging to find some people came back from Florida. We moved down to Florida, retire. And 2 years later, we came back to New York because they could get around. There was transportation. They could walk to stores. They could go to places. And the city was helpful to them in that vein. People also said their participation in life of the city could be made easier with fewer architectural and physical barriers. So the other key issue became the challenges of the urban environment. Nearly half of all seniors age 65 and older in New York City spent at least 35% of their income on rent in 2005. Rent regulations, public housing, and housing programs and subsidies are a lifeline for more than 80% of older residents in New York City. Older adults throughout the city told us that they have seen families, their families, friends, and neighbors move away because they cannot afford to live in the city. And they're, quote, stuck in a rent-controlled apartment, which makes it affordable for them, but they can't move anyplace. They're either maybe on the third floor, fourth floor, so it does have its problems. Let's see. Every time uh, Older New Yorkers comprising only 13% of the city's population, but they represent 33% of the city's pedestrian fatalities in 2001 alone. Over 1,600 older people were injured or killed in traffic crashes. Safety is one of the huge interests in the city. That stat, older New Yorkers comprise of only 13% of the city's population at this time. but represent 33% of the city's pedestrian fatalities. In 2001 alone, over 1,600 older people were injured or killed in traffic crashes. Similarly, the quality and beauty of the city is not partaken in by the seniors because of some of these problems with street crossings. They can't cross the street, the timing on the crossings, and the broken sidewalks, which is a huge problem in New York because we're constantly always building and things are broken and buildings are here and there. So it becomes a problem for them, and they would love to partake in this. So we have this map here showing the householders age 65 plus whose rent is unaffordable. And I mean, that speaks for itself. There are a lot of people, elderly people in New York, that have rent problems. Housing is highlighted as one of the most serious concerns across all the groups. So, one of the ways this unique partnership that New York has with the city is the city decided to do an assessment of their places. You could see the police department, the Department of Housing Preservation, the fire department, Department of City Parks, and all of the city agencies. The mayor asked them to assess how age-friendly they were. And as a result, from our findings of this city assessment, my colleague Tracy Pugh will now address what has happened as a result of our findings in the New York Academy of Medicine and the mayor's assessment, and what is happening now. And just to tell you, it is still going on, and it's wonderful. Tracy?
Hello. Thank you again for having us. Can you move time? Okay. All right. So, as my colleague Carolyn was just describing, she was just giving you a brief snapshot of the findings. Again, they're pretty extensive, and so there is a lot more in depth, and then the expert roundtables are also included in the report. So if there are extras, please take them with you, and it's also available online. Now, again, as she mentioned, the city governments did their own assessment process, and they looked at our findings, and as a result of that, in August of 2009, the city came out with its own listing of recommendations and initiatives. Unfortunately, we weren't able to bring copies of those, but they're also available online, and this is what it looked like. In collaboration with NIAM, the mayor's office, and the city council, we'll work with public and nonprofit partners to implement the recommendations included in this report. And as you can see, there are four main areas. However, it really goes in depth and touches across the eight domains and more. So just to give you a brief overview, we're just going to touch on a few. The next few slides would give you a little picture of what these recommendations and initiatives look like. For example, again, all 49 are not listed. And for example, here we see how they addressed the findings. So one of the findings showed that a number of older New Yorkers have shorter work histories, particularly because much of their work history is limited to informal employment or informal work. And so one of the initiatives to address that is to work with those New Yorkers to obtain formal or eligible employment so that they're eligible for Social Security. So that was just to give you an idea of the findings of the issues with work histories and how this initiative is kind of to help remedy that. One of the examples that's not listed there at all, which is came under culture and recreation, is that one of our findings show that the use of public libraries decreases after the age 50. And so there's an initiative to address that to establish citywide partnerships between senior centers and libraries. And again, this is just to emphasize that our goal of collaboration and cross-sector partnerships. As my colleague mentioned, again, housing came up repeatedly. That was a main issue. And that's an issue for all New Yorkers, really. And so here, part of the issue is the programs that are available, expanding access to the programs that are available, increasing information to these programs, kind of trying to remedy the bureaucratic barriers, also addressing zoning policies, and you know, incorporating contractors and kind of to get them to think about how they could engage in best practices or implement best practices or keep aging and keep older adults, you know, in their scope when they're thinking about their projects. Let's see, public space and transportation, again, Carolyn just spoke on. A number of initiatives will include vouchers and also improving and expanding special transportation services, like AccessoRide is one. And design, the issue of design, again, keeping aging and older adults in the middle, in the process when you're designing new spaces and public spaces. Repeatedly in these designs, it's important to keep them, to make them pedestrian friendly, make seating available, restrooms available. So again, these little things that really get overlooked oftentimes, but came up repeatedly in our findings, are really important to keep in mind when designing public spaces. And then as you read in the reports, in a lot of these, in these different areas, there's also room for improvement. So some of the initiatives include ongoing assessments and ongoing research, and again, continue to talk to communities and talking to older adults. Health and social services, another important issue that came up. So the first one we see, for example, established fitness club discounts for older New Yorkers. One of our findings show that a significant amount of older adults do not engage in regular physical activity. And so to address that, this was one of the recommendations that came about. Implementing citywide falls prevention initiative, another important issue. Falls are among the leading causes of morbidity and mortality from unintentional injuries among older adults. And so just to give you an idea a little bit more about this initiative around city falls prevention, as the report will discuss, it will be one of the components of that initiative will be a collaboration between the Department for the Aging, DFHTA, and the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene. And what their intentions are to convene a citywide falls prevention coalition. And the components of that coalition will be research, talking to older adults, including older adults in their planning, identifying best practices, not just in New York, but nationally and internationally, and incorporating those best practices, and creating information and education materials around those best practices and around falls prevention, and distributing those materials to different stakeholders, like physicians or home visiting programs or city agencies. So that's just to give you an idea of, you know, to look a little bit more in depth at the initiatives. So where are we going from there? So So in addition to those initiatives, the age-friendly New York City Commission is convened by the mayor, the city council, and the New York Academy of Medicine. It's a convening of public, nonprofit, and private sectors. And what they do is, along with these initiatives, they provide also recommendations in within the domains and to address the different findings and the needs of older adults. It's largely people and agencies that are not in aging, an explicit aging service or an explicit aging agency, but it's really across agencies, which is deliberate. This goes back to what an idea that was expressed before of not making more specialty aging services, but really just applying the aging lens and the senior lens to all services and all sectors. So for example, we have housing developers as part of the New York City Commission. And so we want them to apply the aging lens to their work. And it's all parts of the community, and also the heads of agencies are also a part of the commission. So, you know, they're the key decision makers. So along with all the discussions and the talk, we know that we have some very key stakeholders that can really make decisions and bring action along. So from the commission, we've established working groups. So far, we have three preliminary working groups: age-friendly schools, colleges, and universities; age-friendly business; and aging improvement districts. These work groups are led by a commission member, so the broader commission that we just spoke about, and it includes commission members as well as other stakeholders. They reflect the different geographic, geographic, racial, and ethnic diversity of New York City, the different boroughs, and it also includes older adults. Again, older adults are at the center of these convenings, of these work groups, and of these discussions. And a lead staff member from the commission is also a part of these work groups. Other areas that are being decided by the commission to create more work groups are technology, housing, health, and then probably more as we move along into the future. So just this kind of gives you an idea of the goals for one of our work groups, the age-friendly schools. Now, when we try to kind of incorporate the different sectors in these work groups, like the different schools, for example, what we're trying to do is we ask them, what are you doing right now that's age-friendly? And, you know, oftentimes, or sometimes, they will say, well, you know, we are already age-friendly, or we're already doing X, Y, and Z. And so, which is great, which is always great to hear, but then we come back and say, well, how can we help you do more? Or if you're kind of ahead of your peers, how can you help us and we help you to work together to bring your other peers along in being more age friendly? So it's really encouraging people to do a little more and to emphasize this collaborative effort and recognize what people are doing already, because it is important to recognize how people are contributing already and thinking about it. Age-friendly businesses, again, I think Dr. O'Neill spoke a little bit about elder-friendly. So this is a similar idea, and here with age-friendly businesses, one of the challenges that we sometimes come against is really appealing to the interests of the different stakeholders, especially the private stakeholders. It's not always, you know, a selfless, altruistic collaboration, but really how this can benefit them, how their participation can also benefit their interests. And so, you know, we have to first make the case to some of the businesses so that they can recognize the importance of being age-friendly and how it benefits them. And New York City is home to some of the world's largest employers, and it's also home to hundreds of thousands of small businesses, which affect the lives of older adults every day. The health, the physical and mental health of older adults also depends on these businesses. Their ability to have access to food, their ability to have access to entertainment, to visit the pharmacy, the bank, and do all of these things as independently as possible. And so we're really trying to explain to businesses why it is profitable to pay attention to this growing population. Again, similar to the elder-friendly businesses model that was mentioned before. So far, the work group around age-friendly businesses has three priority areas: strengthening the workforce, better serving older adults as customers, and improving the image of businesses by considering corporate responsibility. So what we've trying to go about this so far in the early stages is to first see where local businesses are at. And so that's done through an assessment. And so we developed this checklist, and it has different things on it. For example, does this business offer food products and or services that are appropriate for older adults? Do they make discounts or special offers available for older adults when possible? Do they have a place where customers can sit and rest? Or do they allow customers to use their restroom? And then to carry out these checklists and do these assessments, we're going to have local nonprofit organizations will provide older adult volunteers and help to train them for this process. And then we are first focusing on these thousands of smaller businesses through an educational campaign with the visits from the older adults who are involved. And then we plan to next look toward employment and corporate responsibility of the larger businesses. So that's a little bit further down the road. Okay. So aging improvement districts is really kind of zoning in on the neighborhoods. Okay, so the one size citywide model doesn't fit, as you know, New York City is a city of neighborhoods. So we really wanted to go into the neighborhoods and see how we can make the neighborhoods and see their own unique set of issues and really target a lot of initiatives and programming around that area and improvements around that area. And so further community consultations are done in these neighborhoods. Upper West Side and East Harlem are the two that are significantly underway. And then the Queens, one in Queens and Bed-Stuy in Brooklyn is also in the process of starting. And then these are some of the findings that we found from East Harlem's Aging Improvement District. These are findings that have come up before in other consultations, but then you really see how they are specific to this neighborhood. And again, it's about asking the older adults are at the center of all of this and asking them, what do you need? What do you want? And then we present these findings back to the community, which is really powerful because we have policymakers that attended this convening. And so we have them there with the older adults who are part of this process, and they're really talking to each other. I mean, we make a presentation and we talk about what we found, but then we have the older adults come and speak, and they talk about how they're personally affected and personally invested in this process. And what we found is that the policymakers have responded immediately. I think at one point, by the end of that presentation, the Parks Commissioner was pretty much on the phone and, you know, arranging pool hours for older adults. And that was an immediate response, and that was really powerful. And then we have others that kind of came out of that convening. And then just our final lessons learned, again, collaboration, cross-sectoral partnerships, and this public-private partnership has really been beneficial and just getting the buy-in of our government. And it's really about age mainstreaming. So really having older adults at the center of the process, getting buy-in, get everybody working together. And so far we've been pretty fortunate in that we've been able to do that. And not just top down, but bottom up. And so that's how it's been very successful. And I think that's my time. So just for further information, we have a fairly new staffer, Leonardo Blair, contact him. And all our materials and information is on the website. And we have a video that I showed in a few slides back about when we presented our information for the age friendly districts, and it's a pretty good video, so I recommend looking at that. All right, thank you.
So the attendance and the presentations have far exceeded my expectations for this exploratory kind of thing here at APHA. And so I would like to, first of all, again, thank all of our presenters. So give them a hand. And also take this opportunity to open it up for questions. Yes.
Comment on overlap with child-friendly cities, and particularly some of the workplace, making cities livable with Susan Leonard, that you may have been in contact with, that elderly and children have some elements in common, some things that are different.
I think I have to enter in here the question. So the overlap of child-friendly and age-friendly, comment on what they might know about that. But you have to come to the mic if you...
Well, I am not, we are not aware of the interlocking of that. But personally, I know our division is extremely interested in intergenerational. And we think that intergenerational programming is a focus that should be focused in more communities, with more programming, with the seniors love children, children respect, you know, there's something beautiful between that intergenerational. And we have both, we have seniors and we have children. And it's up to us to connect the dots to get them together too, so.
To my knowledge, the two programs at the World Health Organization don't have any formal overlap. Like many organizations, it's a big organization and it has its sections. But interestingly enough, there are parallels. I did a little bit of looking at what they were doing, just like with the safe communities. And there are parallels across all these initiatives. And just last week, I got an email, this is local, in Portland, from people doing youth planning, reaching out and saying, let's talk, let's see about what we might be able to do together. So I think it's really exciting, and it's certainly an area for further collaboration in the future.
And I think it's here and then here. But I just want to comment on the safe communities, too. I mean, as they were talking, fall prevention is part of the safe communities. So somehow, if they can all work together, then that's going to be another aspect. Yes, Mark.
Well, we personally, we're as far along as you are, but we're on the same program. And we had been talking to an individual who had been originally one of the founders of this group in World Health Organization. He's now up in Canada. So we had a conference call with him and dealing with these projects. But what I wanted to point out in particular, there are two programs here in the United States that very well parallel this, and they're very good programs. And if you use the material from them as well as the material you're getting from World Health Organization, it'll be much to your advantage.
Yeah.
One of the programs is run by the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, and they have a program on age-friendly cities. And go into that, the material that they're pointing out is almost the same material that's coming from the World Health Organization. Some from a slightly different point of view, but it's very good. And there is a new program that is coming up right now. It's in effect now for about 2 months or a little bit longer, run by the CDC. Can't give you they have had two webinars. The last webinar was less than a week ago.
I was on that. I did that.
Okay, yeah, that's right. That's right. You were on it. So it was somebody from
Atlanta.
Atlanta, right. Mm-hmm. And so I was on that program. I was listening to that program. Now, these are beautiful programs, and this program that CDC is doing is also combining the age-friendly and child-friendly. because they're putting this thing together. So that's one of the places we're going to be put together.
The more the merrier.
Yes. To summarize, Toledo, Ohio is talking about collaboration programs with other WHO and CDC and so on, and also to mention that I was born in Toledo, Ohio. I wanted to.
Didn't you say that?
I think you did.
And
yes, I think we had one back here at one point, but let's go here then. Do you have one? Oh, okay, so here and then here. So the question was, is there anything about age-friendly states, and have you worked with that in your states?
We're having conversations with AARP Oregon, because AARP has its Livable Communities Initiative, and they're very interested in these ideas of age-friendly communities and livable communities for all. And we've talked about how to take this initiative statewide, and they're interested in partnering with us to do that. So I guess the message would be stay tuned. I mean, there's certainly interest in doing it, and we can hope. I mean, Oregon is an interesting state because it has a lot of rural area. It's a frontier state. So we have our urban core down sort of one part of the state, and the rest of it's rural or very, very rural frontier. And so community, I think we have to figure out a way to marry this idea of rural communities and age friendliness with age friendly cities. And World Health Organization isn't ready to do that yet. So we are going to have to work with the livable communities. The Environmental Protection Agency's focus on age friendly communities is an important resource too. And there are just a lot of them out there. Oh, that's great. I wonder why.
Here, well, no, it was here and then here.
Tracy wants to comment too.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, I was going to give the short answer, which was no. There is no age-friendly New York State. I think it is interesting at this time to think about that endeavor, because one of our core components is the government collaboration. And so at this time, as you know, New York State is under a bit of a shift legislatively. But also, it's interesting because we have so many counties at the local level. And so I would say the talks are not there yet. But we're always happy to share our information and to help and support any initiatives that could eventually evolve at that level.
And one thing I should mention, that the more rural the area, certainly in Nebraska, Kansas, Iowa, the higher the percentage of older adults.
Yes.
I'm Lily Choi from the BC School of Medicine. I'm a postdoctoral fellow, and my research is about transportation driving cessation and mobility among all the others. And I work with this whole welfare foundation in South Korea, and City of Seoul going to initiate about age-friendly city. So I'm learning a lot through this presentation, so I want to thank you for that. And my question is that working with the government, the real important thing is provide evidence about the effectiveness or successfulness of this program. So the, you know, said that like you like regularly assess the, you know, effectiveness, but not only the qualitative research, how did you prove that, you know, the city got to be more improved in the age-friendly wise? What's the evidence or some measurement?
So the question is about the evidence that it works, or evidence-based, or outcomes that are that result from this.
Well, there have been in New York City quite a number of changes. First of all, in regards to transportation, the street timings have changed, allowing a longer crosswalk period for seniors, and the signage of the some of them, not all of them yet, eventually, the signage of the okay walk, don't walk has increased with different blinkings to help vision impaired people to see better. What else has happened? As Stacy had said, you know, we're going to have senior swim, which was a connecting of the dots very quickly. With the department, the NYCHA housing, they're going to make sure now that there are laundromats in the NYCHA, the city housing buildings, because they saw from the our video how difficult it was for so many seniors to crawl down steps with their laundry and have to go half a block to a laundromat. And the commissioner was very, very touched by it. So he said they're making that change. That's another one. Other changes, I'm drawing a blank right now, but there are quite a number of changes that are in the process, and we're very proud of it. And so is the city. Yes. I'm sorry.
I was going to add just generally, the commission, the age-friendly commission is fairly new. I mean, like I said, I think we released, the city released its initiatives last year, 2009. And then I think it was early this year or late last year that we convened the commission, and then from there, the separate work groups. So within those entities and those convenings, a set of goals are being developed. Some have been developed, and then the initiatives have already been developed. And then progress reports will be released, documenting the progress towards those goals. So that documentation and those assessments will be made and should be released, I think, annually, is what they said. So, but as far as I don't think we've released a progress report just yet, but those are a part of the process.
And it's really too early for the outcomes, because so they have changed the policies. Now the question is, because they've changed the crosswalk time and everything else, does that decrease the injuries and the deaths of pedestrians and so on? But that's down the road. Yes. We have only time for this one and this one.
Well, I'm an environmental health director. I'm a chair of a planning commission, and I'm a senior. And so you talk about, what we have here for seniors is a whole bunch of Venn diagrams, mm-hmm. from mixed use, complete streets, livable communities, healthy communities, seniors and children friendly. And I believe that they're all integrated together. And the key thing is community involvement of focus groups and neighborhood meetings to bring out what they see as our needs. Because when we do these comprehensive plans, we're doing one in Golden through the Orton Family Foundation. We got lucky and got a grant, Golden, Colorado. I say, this is a 20-year vision. I'm going to be 87. What do I want when I'm 87? So we need to have people think about that, not just the curve, but what will they really want as we try to plan. So I see lots of venting, and I think we need to read all the literature on these things and see how it interfaces and build integration, so we don't have the kids get the older people in the middle people of trying to pay for all of it.
Summarize integration. Yes.
Hi, my name is Michelle Sternfall. I work at the Housing and Urban Development. And it seemed a fortuitous convergence of key words, perhaps, because one of the things that I overheard a lot was emphasis on housing and role of government. And I just wanted to give a quick bird's eye view from the federal government perspective. It's actually a very exciting time at HUD, because one of the strategic goals of the new secretary is to use housing as a platform to improve quality of life. And one of those metrics there is really looking at housing, the co-location of services for elderly, like housing sites. And as part of that, there's a new Health and Human Services HUD interagency collaboration working specifically on elderly adults who are served by both populations, particularly low-income elderly that's who are living in public housing sites. And what are the ways that we can promote aging in place, is the term that's being used, prevent nursing home, going to nursing homes and reduce costs associated with healthcare and promote communities. So as you're doing the work at the city level, I would just encourage you to sort of keep your eye on what's happening at the federal level, because there's a lot of administrative support for this type of collaboration.
And talking about integration, the previous presentation I went to was talking about smoke-free housing and people who want smoke-free. So there's all those things that overlap. And actually, New York City and I think Portland too, they aren't saying it's only for older adults. They're trying to make it age-friendly for all ages. And so that's an important thing. I think there's a little bit of time before the next session comes in, so if you want to come up and talk to the panelists, that you would be able to do that. So thank you all for coming, and have a good rest of the conference.